This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Tuesday, July 1st, 6:30 at Veterans Stadium. Joey Lee and Del Rickland in concert. A bug couch match. An Indian strap match. A taped fist match. A pole match with glove on top. Six-man tag team match. The Rock and Roll Express team up with Baby Doll to take on the Midnight Express and Jim Cornette. First in a best-of-seven series for the U.S. Heavyweight title. Magnum T.A. against Nikita Koloff. Steel cage match. Dusty Rhodes and Road Warrior Animal against Ole and Arn Anderson. And for the World Heavyweight title, Nature Boy Ric Flair, the champion, defense against Road Warrior Hawk. It's the Great American Bash. Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, Tuesday, July 1st at 6:30.
And fans at Veterans Stadium, in a cage, you will see the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, and Road Warrior Animal take on Ole and Arn Anderson in this cage. Let's bring in the World TV Champion, Arn Anderson.
Well, you know, if Animal could tie a sentence together that would be legible, you might ask him and say, listen, Dusty, do you still have your edge? The Four Horsemen have got to you not once, but they've got to you twice. And I don't know what he's going to have to say to you, Animal, but the one thing he will tell you, it's just going to be horrifying. He's going to say, Animal, I've been in a cage with an Anderson. I know how vicious they can be. I know how horrifying it can be to be locked in a cage with no place to go. Ellering can't help you. Hawk can't help you because he's going to be sitting in the dressing room horrified at the onslaught. It's coming from another member of the Horsemen, and I'm talking about the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Gear up, Philadelphia. You're a violent city. You are raised on violence. And when it gets to the cage match, the Andersons versus Animal and the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, we won't disappoint you on violence.
NWA World Heavyweight Title, Nature Boy Ric Flair defense against Road Warrior Hawk.
You know what the Road Warrior Hawk is? He's like a lot of women I know around the world that have got a full sweater and an empty head. That means the Road Warrior Hawk has got all those big muscles, but nothing upstairs to make him go round and round. And you're talking about challenging me, the world champion, for this? Well, Road Warrior Hawk, when you walk that aisle in Veterans Stadium and there's 50,000 people hollering, Hawk, don't do it! Hawk, don't do it! And then you get in that ring and I beat you up so bad you won't know your name. Then you're going to know why. They were hollering, Hawk, Ric Flair, woo, is the legend, the Great American Bash, Philadelphia, the champ will be there. Woo!
Independence Day is upon us. Happy 4th of July to all of our United States listeners. Welcome to the newest episode of the NWA Saturday Special. I am your co-host, Scott Criscolo. Good evening, or good morning. Actually, it's more like good morning. I should probably start to say good morning since it's probably the first time you hear this, although it could be good afternoon. It's good regardless, in my eyes, Dr. G, George Ubaldino. But to him, at this point, it's just one long day.
That's true. But I'm looking forward to, the show and got some exciting things. You know, it's the Place to Be Wrestling Network is really hot right now. You know,
it is hot.
It's not a lot of great current product just due to the situation going on in the world. There's a lot of great podcasts, a little retro action. And I look forward to this every week. I'm looking forward to the NWA coming back for real, you know, the current NWA. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but I agree.
You know what? We got to do what we got to do, and we're going to talk about some old school stuff and hope everybody's enjoying the ride.
It's not just us.
Where we come.
It's not just us. I mean, we're definitely here on all of our feeds, our two feeds, the Place to Be Wrestling Network. Place to Be Pop Feed doesn't have wrestling. The No-So has wrestling, of course. Jenny Position doesn't have any wrestling because she's over here. But, you know, with the current products, all of them either poor or non-existent, history has been such – classic wrestling has been so great for 2020. It's almost like a – saving grace, considering what's been going on. And we've had new shows debuting. We have a big show debuting this month here on the feed. all talking about classic wrestling, because either people can't stand empty arena wrestling, or they just can't watch current wrestling at all, or they're just disgusted by the sexual assault allegation scandal and or whatever else is going on that is ruining current wrestling. And again, I've said this on many shows. I said it the other night on our most recent episode of Place to Be Nation's Main Event, which you can check out. Which you can check out on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, the Place to Be Wrestling Network. Nate, Steve, and I talked about an extensive segment on current wrestling, so check that out. And that classic wrestling has suddenly stepped to the fore and has kind of been the saving grace for a lot of us, or we'd lose our minds. There's only so much Netflix and movies to watch. We need our classic wrestling. We're talking mostly classic wrestling on tonight's episode, too. Today's episode. This week's episode. So, yeah, check out the this week's episode of Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Nate, Steve, and I talk about the current state of wrestling as we're exactly at the halfway point of the calendar year. So, now, this week here on the Saturday special, the special 4th of July edition of the Saturday special, we were going to do our fourth and final installment of our NWA Mount Rushmore. The past three episodes, we've done the three guys that were unanimously on the list: Harley Race, Dusty Rhodes, and Ric Flair. And we were going to have a little roundtable with some PTBers to talk about who we all think should be the fourth face of the Mount Rushmore. However, something struck me that this year, the 4th of July, Independence Day, was on a Saturday. And the fact that a lot of people are away this weekend, with their families, family gatherings, of course. So they're not around to record and do a show. So I said, you know what, why don't we hold off a week and so we will be doing, so if you're expecting, you obviously know what this episode is because you saw the title, but we will be doing the part four of the Mount Rushmore series next weekend, where we can get some people to sit around the table with some beers and some cigars and talk about who was the fourth face on the mountain after Handsome Harley, the Dream, and the Nature Boy. So tonight, or this week, we're going to talk about, since it is the 4th of July, and it is July in general, let's talk about one of the NWA and Jim Crockett Promotion's greatest inventions. And once again, who invented it but the man himself, the guy who invented almost everything great in Southern wrestling, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. He invented Starrcade. He invented War Games, which we will talk a little bit about tonight. But he invented this. This week on the NWA Saturday special, fitting for this holiday, the legacy of the Great American Bash. How do we not talk about the Great American Bash? Obviously, NXT did it this past week, or part one. Part two is this coming Wednesday. So, Dr. G, how do we not talk about the Great American Bash? I mean, it's a piece of NWA legacy, you know?
It is, and the thing is that it was kind of an unprecedented way. I mean, we saw the first year was, you know, a traditional big wrestling card, you know, did it in a you know, stadium venue. But the second year, which we'll get into, you know, having like a traveling a tour, I guess, which was kind of unprecedented for that time.
Yeah. Now, you know, throughout history, we've had our single shot outdoor shows. Of course, WWF's big one to that point was in 1980 when they had the showdown at Shea in the summer of 1980, which was culminated by the Bruno Sammartino, Larry Zbysko cage match. Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant met for the first time, although pre-WrestleMania 3, so we're not supposed to talk about it. Our Intercontinental Champion and our World Champion became tag team champions. Bob Backlund and Pedro Morales won the tag titles on that night, so they had everything. They had all the gold. They were like the two-man power trip, except not as cool. but so outdoor shows, one single outdoor show, is not unprecedented. And as Dr. G said, the first Great American Bash, so Dusty Rhodes decided, you know what? It's nice and hot in the summertime. Why don't we have a good old-fashioned Southern wrestling show at night? We'll bring in, you know, a band. We'll bring in recording artists, music, bring the whole family. I'm sure the tickets weren't ridiculously expensive. If you were in a big building, you were probably, you know, it probably wasn't overly expensive for seats. Maybe on the floor, on a field level, maybe they were a little expensive. But, you know, if you're sitting in the bleachers, probably not. So on July 6th, 1985, which I believe is the same night, Dr. G, that in just north of there in Baltimore, Maryland, when Tito Santana defeated Greg the Hammer Valentine inside a steel cage to win back his Intercontinental Championship that he lost the year before. So a big night in wrestling history, July 6th, 1985. We had this show.
Was that when Greg Valentine bashed up the belt?
Yes, yeah, smashed the belt. And then, of course, the awesome Intercontinental title belt we would have for the next 13 years would be created by Reggie Parks. So on this night, July 6th, 1985, at the American Legion Memorial Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina, we had the first Great American Bash. The event included a 1 hour live concert performance by Dusty Rhodes' boy David Allan Coe. You don't think that was planned? Here is the card. Ron Bass fought Buddy Landell to a draw. Because J.J. Dillon's little crew broke up there. Of course, Ron Bass and Black Bart were the long... that was called you, J.R. Dr. G. The Minnesota Wrecking Crew defeated Buzz Sawyer and Dick Slater for NWA National Tag Team title match. Of course, we're talking about Ole and Arn. In a six-man tag, Manny Fernandez, Sam Houston, and Buzz Tyler defeated superstar Billy Graham, Conga the Barbarian. When did they call him Conga? They never called him Conga. That's, of course, Sione. And Abdul the Butcher in a six-man tag. Jimmy Valiant took on Paul Jones in a dog collar match. The Russians, Crusher Khrushchev and Ivan Koloff, they were the World Tag Team Champions, fought the Road Warriors to a double DQ. Magnum TA defeated Kamala by DQ to retain the U.S. title. Ric Flair defeated Nikita Koloff to retain the world title with David Crockett as the special ref. Oh, God, that must have been dreadful. And in the main event, Dusty Rhodes defeated Tully Blanchard in a steel cage match to win the NWA World Television Championship. Not a bad card, huh?
No.
I like to, I got 27,000 in attendance. And again, David Allan Coe did a concert the night before, or that night. So, pretty cool. After a year, Dusty Rhodes, things are hot in the NWA. Of course, Starrcade 85 happens. Going to 1986, the Four Horsemen are created, making things, you know, 10 times incredibly awesome. Dusty goes to Jim Crockett and says, "Let me tell you something, baby. Let me tell you something, Jimmy Thee. What do you think, baby, about doing bashes all over the Southeast, baby? Let me go to Philadelphia. What do you think? Little Baltimore. We can do bashes all over, baby. Yeah." I know that's a moderately average Dusty impersonation, but, you know.
Yes. You tried.
But I tried. I remember reading PWI and them talking about it on the Saturday Night Show, Dr. G, and I was like, oh, really? Like, the Bash is going to tour? Seriously? Multiple shows? Holy shit! What were you thinking? You must have been more excited than me because, you know, I lived up here. I seriously doubt they were going to croach too deep into the Northeast. But you, down in Southern Florida, you must have been pumped.
Well, you know, it was cool. I mean, I have to be honest with you. I probably think of it's more cool now than I did then. Because, you know, that time you're younger, you don't really realize the magnitude of it, but it was kind of right. Cool. The fact that I think in 86, and I don't remember, I know they came to the Orange Bowl. They came down to Miami. I remember I didn't go.
Well, I'll give you the whole tour in a second, but go ahead.
They did Charlotte, I believe. I want to say they did it, Philadelphia.
Oh, this is what, here's the tour. It went from July 1st to July 26th. And here's where, oh, I'm sorry, July 5th through August 2nd. So
and this is
July
1986, 1st, the first
1986.
Year.
1986. Yep, 1986. July 1st in Philadelphia.
When I say the first year they did the tour.
The first year they did a tour. Yeah, the first year they did a tour. Right. The first year they did a full-blown tour. July 1st at Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. July 3rd in Washington, D.C., probably RFK. 4th of July in Memphis. July 5th in Charlotte. July 8th, Charleston, West Virginia. July 9th, Cincinnati. July 10th, Roanoke, Virginia. July 12th, Jacksonville, Florida. July 18th, Richmond, Virginia. July 21st, Fayetteville, North Carolina. July 23rd, Johnson City, Tennessee. July 25th, Norfolk, Virginia. Three times in Virginia. July 26th, Greensboro. And then it ended on August 2nd in Atlanta. So the 1986, they did not go to Florida. Maybe the following year. We'll get to 87 in a minute.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they came to Florida for one of the years. Because they did the tours, I think, 86 and 87.
Yes. Now, two of the shows are on the WWE Network under the Hidden Gems, the July 5th and the July 26th shows, both shows in Charlotte.
So is Jenny and the Gems going to cover that?
We did one. We did the I think we did the July 5th one. Yeah, we did the July 5th one, because I remember we did Ric Flair and Ricky Morton. We didn't do the July 26th one, which surprised me, because Jenny's a big Dusty fan. Of course, he wins the title. Maybe we'll have to do that. But I know one of the Gems we did. I'll have to look that up while we're talking. Now I'm curious which one we did. You know what? It's right open. Let me see. Which one do we do? We did... Oh, no, we did Bash 88. That's what it was. We did Bash 88 in Greensboro. They did do an outdoor bash, not just the pay-per-view in Baltimore, but they did an outdoor show in 88 in Greensboro. That's the one we did on Jenny and the Gems. So we need to do one of these other ones. So they did shows in Charlotte and in Greensboro. Those two shows are on the WWE Network under Hidden Gems. So look them up and watch them. Both of them ended with Ric Flair title matches, both in cages. One he successfully defended against Ricky Morton, and of course the other one on July 26th. The American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, won his final NWA World's Heavyweight Championship, beating Ric Flair in the cage. Among the matches on these two nights, it was really good. Wahoo McDaniel took on Jimmy Garvin in a strap match on July 5th. Road Warriors against the Russians in a Russian chain match. In a six-man tag in a cage, Dusty, Magnum, and Baby Doll against the Midnight Express and Jim Cornette. Those matches were on July 5th. On the 26th, you had Black Bart the Barbarian against Denny Brown and the Italian Stallion. Yeah, because I pay to see him. Tully Blanchard beat Ronnie Garvin in a fist match. That might have been pretty stiff. Paul Jones defeated Jimmy Valiant in a hair versus hair match. It was match number 4 of the best of 7 series between Magnum TA and Nikita Koloff for the United States Championship. Road Warriors against the Midnight Express and Jim Cornette in a steel cage. And then, of course, the main event, Dusty Rhodes, as we mentioned, winning his third and final World's Heavyweight Championship, defeating Ric Flair in a cage. Both those cards are fucking amazing. Again, they are on those two shows in their entirety are on the WWE Network under the Hidden Gems, so you might as well watch them. 1 year later, 1987, they did it again. Let's see how many. They don't have the whole tour here. It looks like they only did three. Do they do three shows? Bash series took place in numerous venues all July long. So, they have the whole tour. The whole tour is not there, but they did do a show. Here we go. Oh, here we go. All right, now we're cooking with some gas, Dr. G. So 1987, they do it again. They did three major shows, and they did some smaller shows. Did they
go to Miami?
They did. We'll get to that card in a moment. But in 1987 on the Great American Bash Tour, what other amazing invention did Dusty Rhodes come up with in 1987 during the Great American Bash Tour?
The Crockett Cup?
No, the Crockett Cup is its own thing. A match concept. The match beyond. Two rings, two cages. No way out. Right. Of course, War Games was invented in 1987.
I forgot about that.
War Games was invented in 1987. And those were the main events of most of the shows. So there were smaller shows on the Great American Bash Tour in 87. The three big ones were on the 4th of July. So 33 years ago today, if you're listening to this the day that this show dropped, at the Omni in Atlanta, so they did an indoor show. Then July 18th at the Memorial Stadium in Charlotte. And then July 31st, here we go, at the Orange Bowl in Miami.
I remembered.
July 31st. Ready for the card? Here's the Orange Bowl card for you. Oh, how did you not go to this? Just looking right at this first match. This has you written all over it. Manny Fernandez and the Barbarian defeated the Mulkey Brothers.
Oh, how did I miss that?
The Mulkey Brothers were in the Orange Bowl, Dr. Jamie, and you were not
alive.
There.
And you were, was alive and running. Oof.
And you were not there. Disappointed. You did not jump on the Mulkey Mania bandwagon.
I know. Take away my wrestling fandom now.
You should be stripped by not seeing the Mulkeys. Other matches. Barry Windham and Incubus for the Western States Heritage Championship. I don't know who the hell Incubus is. The Sheepherders fought Jimmy Garvin and Ronnie Garvin to a double DQ. Oh, look at this, Dr. G. For the NWA Florida Tag Team Championship. This has you written all over it. Mike Rotunda defeated Ivan Koloff to retain the NWA Florida Heavyweight Championship.
That's all right.
Kevin Sullivan defeated Dory Funk Jr. in a Texas death match. The Rock and Roll Express defeated the Midnights to retain the NWA World Tag Team titles. And in the main event, the Road Warriors, Dusty Rhodes, Nikita Koloff, and Paul Ellering defeated the Four Horsemen and the War Machine in a War Games match. You know who the War Machine was? Do you remember?
I don't.
Ray Traylor.
That's right.
How, Dr. G, did you not walk into the Orange Bowl on that evening? You should have told your dad, you know, you were going to Hialeah or something.
Yeah, you know, I was surprised we didn't go because we were so into it, but we don't. I didn't know.
Gift. You graduated from grammar school. You were becoming a freshman in high school that fall. You should have asked for it for a graduation gift. I'd have gone. Well, my dad would have been like, "Yeah, right. I ain't sitting in the sun."
First of all, I didn't go to our grammar school per se.
Oh, I went. I'm sorry. You went to
middle school. We had elementary, and then we had middle school. Or up here, they used to call junior high, I guess.
You know, the Florida tag team title belts are kind of cool looking, just to let you know.
You said you never announced that match. You said Mike Rotunda defended his Florida championship, but
I did say the Florida tag team titles, didn't I?
But then you just said Mike Rotunda versus.
I said the Sheepherders against Jimmy Garvin and Ronnie Garvin.
Okay, but you didn't say that was for the tag.
Yeah, that was for the Florida Tag Team Championship.
Yeah, you know, that belt, the Florida Tag Team belts, I don't know if they just brought out for that show because they were around back in the 70s and early 80s, and then they kind of took a hiatus. And I don't remember them being Florida Tag Team Champions, to be honest with you.
This must be one of my favorite teams, by the way, on a side note. Seek Championship Wrestling for Florida. Bob Cook and Jerry Gray. They were called the Mighty Yankees. Was that your favorite team? Was that your favorite team in Florida? The Mighty Yankees? Bob Cook and Jerry Gray, just to let you know. There was a team called the Mod Squad. Do you remember them? Basher and Spike.
Vaguely. you know, sometimes on these shows, they would just come up with these guys. I have to be honest with you.
Dusty and Andre were past Florida Tag Team Champions. Did you know that?
Yes.
They won the titles from the Cowboy Connection in February of 81 in Fort Lauderdale. It just says CWF show. It doesn't say where. The Cowboy Connection was Bobby Jaggers and RT Tyler. Anyway, we're going off the path here. Anyway, 1987 Bash, they did three big shows, all of them ending.
Isn't that what we normally do?
True. Maybe we'll do an episode. Maybe we'll do a Florida Championship Wrestling episode. What do you think? Championship Wrestling Florida episode? We could do that. So they had three major shows in 87 on the Great American Bash Tour. Then after that, they went to pay-per-views. They went to pay-per-views. Although, as I mentioned earlier, the following year in 1988, they did do an outdoor Great American Bash show. If you go back into the catalog of the Place to Be Wrestling Network, you can check out an episode of Jenny and the Gems where Jenny, myself, Matt Souza, and Drew Wardlaw talked about the hidden gem Great American Bash show in Greensboro, not the pay-per-view Great American Bash, which took place in Baltimore. That was, of course, in the Gems.
Just because we were talking about the Florida Tag Team Championships, I hate to leave things. It was the belts were deactivated in 1981, and they were brought back in 1986 when the new breed, Chris Champion and Sean Royal, were the champions. And now I do kind of remember that that they did bring them back. So don't like to leave things hanging.
I understand. Well, Crockett was still working with a lot of territories down there. I mean, obviously, the Crocketts were still close with Jim Barnett in Georgia, still close with your boy Eddie Graham in Florida. So, because we saw Florida matches at Starcade in 85.
Well, Crockett eventually bought the CWF. So
wasn't it Art Barr and what the fuck was that show? What was that match at Starcade 85? It was Art Barr and Terry Taylor? No, he was Mid-South. Art Barr and I don't know who the fuck another guy was. Was it Mike Graham? Probably.
Jesse Barr, you mean?
Jesse Barr. No, our Barr was Eddie Guerrero's tag partner that passed away. That's right, Jesse Barr.
Haas.
No, Jimmy Jack.
Oh, Jimmy Jack, right.
Haas Jimmy Jack. Dory was Haas.
Dory
was Haas. Terry was Terry.
That's right.
Jesse Barr was Jimmy Jack Funk. He wasn't even a Funk. Like Lance Von Erich. Maybe we should do a show on fake guy. Well, they're all. I guess their real name really isn't Von Erich. But anyway, it's a totally other story there. So by 1988, the tours ended for the most part, and the Great American Bash became a pay-per-view. And the first one was 1988, and Baltimore was usually the site for it. They're in Baltimore. Between 1988 and 2000, the years that the Bash was in WCW's hands, they were in Baltimore 8 times. The only years they were not in Baltimore, 1992, they were in Georgia. 1995, then 2 years they didn't do a Great American Bash. 1995, they were in Trotwood, Ohio at the Hera Arena. And then Bash 97, which is the Bash that the Outsiders threw Bischoff onto that stage. That was at the Mark of the Quad in Moline, Illinois. But other than that, other than 92, 95, and 97, every Great American Bash pay-per-view was in Baltimore. And most of them were world title matches.
I wonder, I think they went away from the stadium tour because that was when, Crockett was kind of in trouble and then they sold to Ted Turner. But, I mean, right. Really the concept of it was really innovative for the time. Now, maybe they couldn't be able to fill the stadiums as much as they would have liked to have. You know, because things started getting a little tumultuous starting in late 87, early 88.
Right. Yeah.
In Crockett.
Yep.
You know, when he got big, too big, too fast.
Yep. No, I agree. I agree with you.
And he got careless when he bought the UWF. And that's when things started going downhill. But I mean, I just love the fact that, and again, just think about if they had the marketing genius of a Vince McMahon behind this Great American Bash Tour. Oof, how successful it could have been. I mean, we could criticize Vince for many things, and sometimes it's well deserved. But when it came to marketing his product, there was nobody better.
Yeah, I mean, how great would a Bash summer tour have been? Now, they did – now, just to kind of – maybe we can expand this briefly to talk about outdoor shows, because they did do outdoor show. You know, Vince did have outdoor tours, mostly of the Northeast. There used to be the Melody Tent in Cape Cod. My PIC there, Mr. Azzaro, always talks about the shows he went to at the fuck was that – the Music Theater in Warwick, or the Warwick Musical Theater, I think it was called. They had tent shows. They did tent shows. But had Vince ever really wanted to do like a summer, like baseball city tour, like minor league stadiums, he could have made a killing in the Federation era. Could you imagine Hulk Hogan at Quigley Stadium in West Haven? No, probably not. The place is a dump. what about Fort Lauderdale, where the Yankees play, or at the time in the 80s?
Fort Lauderdale Stadium, yeah. I mean, I just love the concept that Dusty came up with, and the fact that, you know, at the time they were just so hot, and, you know, if you have the Horsemen headlining, or the Road Warriors headlining, or Dusty headlining, Ric Flair, you were going to, you know, you should be able to sell out the show, or at least put some fannies in the seats. And the feuds were so good. And then, you know, just then coming up with the War Games concept, and, you know, they always had the gimmick matches, the chain matches, and the Texas death matches. So it always added that little extra, you know, that you wanted to go see those matches. It was just different. You know, Southern wrestling was just totally different. It was booked differently. Again, they didn't have the marketing machine, because if they had the marketing machine, and like I said on my last show that you guys will hear, are the NWA Crock and Roll, which is premiering on the 22nd, right? 22nd of July here?
Yeah.
So when we talk about, I mentioned in the program that, you know, that period of time in wrestling from 85 to 88, this Crockett era, there was no better wrestling, really, than in the NWA. But they just didn't have that marketing vehicle to really take the Federation, or the, you know, the NWA to the heights that the WWF did. Because honestly, I mean, I enjoyed the matches better. Now, of course, I love the show part of it and the entertainment part of it in the WWF when I watched that. But when you wanted true gritty wrestling, Southern style wrestling, there was no better than the NWA. They just knew how to do it, and they did it right.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't know how to market themselves correctly.
Yeah.
That was their problem.
Yeah. And Jim Crockett spent a ton of money on silly stuff. And, you know, ultimately, of course, he would.
Yeah, I mean,
between 89 and 90. 88 was technically the last NWA Jim Crockett Promotions solo Great American Bash. That was the first pay-per-view, July 10th of 88. Flair and Luger was the main event. Of course, they would rematch at Starrcade. 89 and 90 would be NWA-WCW hybrid. 89 was that great show, great main event with Flair and Funk, which is actually an unheralded match. A match I'm seriously considering on my GWCW Top 100. Bash 90 in Baltimore, of course, was Sting's big moment. Sting finally won the world title, beating Flair. Then 1991, it was officially passed over to World Championship Wrestling. The 91 Bash is considered one of the worst shows ever. Bash 92 is not too bad. That's the main event of that was a tournament final for the world titles. The Miracle Violence Connection, one of my favorite tag team names ever. Terry Gordy and Dr. Death Steve Williams against Dustin Rhodes and Barry Windham. Then the next 2 years, they would use Bash at the Beach instead, or Beach Blast. No, Bash at the Beach. And then they would bring the Great American Bash back in 1995. Ric Flair and Randy Savage was the main event of that show. And then so forth and so on until WCW closed up shop in 2001. So the last WCW Bash was in 2000. Fast forward to 2004, and of course, WWE, when they bought WCW and all of the copyrights, they decided to do some bashes themselves. So their first Great American, and they didn't do any outdoor shows, which would have been kind of cool, actually. June of 2004 was the first Great American Bash done by WWE. Of course, that was the night that JBL defeated Eddie Guerrero in the bull rope match to win the WWE Championship. That one was in Norfolk. The following year, they'd wrestle in Buffalo in 2005. 2006 was in Indianapolis.
Those were SmackDown only shows, and then et cetera, down the line. We don't want to get into those. That's WWE stuff. But anyway, the big thing I wanted, we really wanted to emphasize tonight on this episode was Dusty Rhodes. Look, Dusty's made some wonky creative decisions in his life, but the three things he should be the most proud of, God rest his soul, that his family should be the most proud of: Starrcade, the Great American Bash, and War Games. And two of them were invented at the same time, roughly. Great American Bash, outdoor wrestling show tour. I mean, that's right. Ridiculous, you know? And of course, a lot of those probably had, again, entertainment. We mentioned in 1985 in the first show, David Allan Coe played. I'm sure some other local music stars played. They might have treated it like almost a festival. Maybe they had rides or something, or maybe they had like a little, you know, concession stands and carnival kind of things. I would do that, you know. But would a concept like that really work now, you think? I mean, obviously, I could see, let's put it this way, and I will give credit here. WWE probably wouldn't do it. But when we move ahead to the future, when things are back to normal, and this company decides that they want to spend money on stuff like that, I could easily see AEW doing some type of outdoor tour.
I could see AEW doing it because, you know what, the roots of that company, you know, even though it is a, you know, international company and they don't want to, it does have a lot of Southern roots to it. And, you know, based on, you know, with Cody involved and, you know, now you have Arn and Jake and, you know, some of those guys involved in the company. I could see it. I could see them doing it. You know, why not bring it to minor league stadiums around?
Sure.
You don't have to go to you know, Yankee Stadium or, you know, Camden Yards. Start. I don't know if wrestling itself, except for WrestleMania or the big shows, you know, the big four for WWE, could really generate those big kind of crowds anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, go on a little tour. I mean, I would love to see. I mean, unfortunately, WWE owns the name, but it would be neat to see AEW do like a Great American Bash kind of tour thing.
Sure.
Once they get back. Because I think the concept of, you know, making it an event. So, like, if AEW, let's just say they decided to do this, and they decided to do in the month of July and do these minor league stadiums if they mm-hmm. could, you know, have some entertainment. You know, bring in a, you know, you may not get, like, a gigantic act, but if you get somebody that, you know, an up-and-coming act of whether it be country or whatever music, it doesn't, could be any kind of music, you know, you try to get them, so it's like you kind of helping each other out, get a band to get a little bit more notoriety and get the AEW name out there a little bit more. I could definitely see it happening because it would be interesting. I mean, I love the concept of the outside shows. I don't know why. I mean,
oh, I think it's awesome.
Obviously, the crowd noise and everything, it's better, better inside. It's a little rough, I think, when you have the bigger shows. Like I like WrestleMania, and you've been to WrestleMania. My first WrestleMania was outside, so I've never been to a WrestleMania inside. But I think that for WrestleMania, I kind of like it inside. You know, when I'm watching it on pay per view, I think the noise is louder. I mean, except for like when they were at the Astrodome, you know, that had a really good sound to it. But with these little tours, like I just love like in the smaller stadiums, I don't know, there's just some kind of, even though you could still get like 10,000 people at those shows, it still mm-hmm. has an intimacy about it, but it's outside. I don't know. Just, I kind of like it, you know, it's kind of like old school, kind of a mixture of like that, you know, feeling you get when you go to a baseball game, but you know, so you're going to a wrestling match, and then just adding a little entertainment, you know, a little summertime concert. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, do you like the concept of an outside show? What about it do you like with an outside show like that? More in a smaller stadium, not necessarily these, you know, 60,000-70,000 people stadiums.
Yeah, it would probably be difficult right now.
No, but what do you think? What do you think of, you know, what do you think about like having them in like minor league stadiums?
I think it's intimate. I mean, I could see, I mean, you and I have been to a ton of minor league stadiums, mostly in the Northeast. But I could see the problem is you got to have it in somewhere moderately close to a tri-state, you know, somewhere to a big city. Like I could see them doing it at MCU Park in Brooklyn. I could see them doing it in Staten Island. I can't see them doing it in Moosup, where, in the suburbs of Scranton, Moosick?
Moosick, yeah.
Moosup, whatever. Somewhere in the fucking woods. In the burbs of Scranton. I can't see them doing a show there. It's just too desolate. But I could see them doing it in Staten Island or in Brooklyn or even maybe New Britain, you know, because it's kind of near Hartford. Or Hartford or Dunkin' Donuts Park in Hartford where the Yard Goats play. Just using, you know, places that I can think
Durham.
Of.
Durham.
You know, Durham. Durham, North Carolina. Worcester, where the Paw Sox are moving. They're moving to Worcester.
What do you like about the outside show concept, though?
It has a – there's something very important. There's a – particularly if you're at a place where there's a nice sunset and you see it in the background and it kind of – like I will never forget one of my favorite outside moments of all time. Was at WrestleMania 29. You and I were there. We were in different sections, but you and I were there at MetLife when Taker fought Punk, and that epic entrance, and it was cloudy out, and the moon was hiding behind the clouds. There's just if you have a big match and it's a big match feel, and you're outside and there's a huge amount of people, and huge amount could be 35,000. A huge amount doesn't have to be 85,000 or 80,000 like at MetLife. You could have 25,000, and you can even have 8,000. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I like about the smaller minor league, you know, the minor league stadiums is the fact there's still something intimate about it, but it's just kind of got that nice, you know, especially if it's a beautiful summer night, or like you said, just the backdrop of like, you know, in Coney Island and
right.
Brooklyn, you know, having, you know, that the background of that, or, you know, just certain stadiums have that certain charm to them.
Yep. Another place I like that we've been to, for both baseball and wrestling is MCU Park in Brooklyn. It's literally right on the beach in Coney Island.
Well, that's what I was just saying. You know,
yeah.
When we, you know, like Coney Island definitely has that feel, and we saw a show there, so we had a good time. You know, and it was just something intimate about it, and just seeing, you know, you see the background of the boardwalk and the. You know, the Wonder Wheel.
I think Bushwhacker Luke walked right off to fucking Nathan's after he got eliminated from that Battle Royal. The show we're talking about, it was a Ring of Honor show. This was the night before the first, so it was 2015. So it was the night before the first SummerSlam in that run they did in Brooklyn. This is pre NXT TakeOver. We were in Brooklyn. Oh, no. NXT TakeOver did go on. We went to the ROH show instead because the TakeOver show was booked. Was set after the fact. And, you know, seeing like the sunset and the water and everything, and then there's a match going on. It was really cool. But you definitely need the right kind of place with the right kind of seating. Like we've always said that SummerSlam at Fenway or at Citi Field or Yankee Stadium or Shea back in the day would have been a pretty cool concept. Vince never wanted – the only outdoor SummerSlam he ever got was Wembley. We never got an outdoor SummerSlam, which is kind of a bummer. But now WCW did outdoor Nitros when they would do those Daytona spring break.
Or Panama City and all Panama that. City,
yep. Not the same thing, though, because, you know, it's obviously tighter camera shots because it's TV and, you know, that kind of thing. But the concept Dusty had of being in a big outdoor venue – and the ring, and he obviously Crockett probably pimped a ton of field seats. And then you had like the cool thing, like Ric Flair arriving in a helicopter. You know, I mean, how cool was that? Like those kinds of things were what made the Great American Bash outdoor show special. Seeing Ric Flair come down in a fucking helicopter. I mean, how cool was that? You know, now in 85, he was a babyface. He didn't turn heel till September. 86, of course, he was a big heel, because he was wrestling Dusty. And, of course, Dusty, as we mentioned, won the title. So if you haven't watched them, take a minute to go to the WWE Network, go to the Hidden Gems, and find those two outdoor bash shows from 1986. Or find the one that Jenny and Sousa and Mr. Wardlaw and I did, the Hidden 88 Bash, because that one's forgotten because they actually did a pay-per-view Great American Bash, an indoor show in Baltimore. This is a forgotten outdoor show in Greensboro, and it's a fun little show with some. So watch the show and then listen to the episode of Jenny and the Gems. I think you'll like it. I would love to see an outdoor tour thing happen, but I don't think WWE would do that because WWE doesn't think outside the box for anything anymore, and I admit that. I could see AEW doing it if they do it right. And this is where I trust Cody. I think Cody could do that. But again, you got to have Cody do it because the Bucks and Kenny, they don't have a fucking clue about any of this bullshit.
Well, and the thing is that it would be cool for them to get the name, but it looks like, you know, WWE
could sell it. But, you know, unlike the AEW fans who just want WWE to hand Cody everything because he's a victim, why doesn't Cody work out something with his business deal and do like he did for Bash at the Beach at the beginning of the year? They did a Bash at the Beach episode of Dynamite. Go to the WWE lawyers and say, may I have a live patent for the Great American Bash and do live shows? Would that be okay? Now, it's not going to happen because now WWE used it. NXT's using it, so that's not going to happen. But do Beach Blast. Ask for Beach Blast. I don't think WWE will ever do Beach Blast.
He got a few of the trademarks of different pay-per-views. I know that Dusty was involved in.
Well, I'm pretty sure from what I've read, there's a difference between applying for a live patent and for an archive patent. Like, it was okay for Cody to use the Bash at the Beach copyright without any of the WWE Network properties being touched. So there's some warbling legal mumbo-jumbo that goes way over my pay grade. So we'll see. I would love to see AEW or, hell, why can't the NWA do it? Down the line, maybe next year when things, you know, when they kind of restructure and get things. Who's to say Billy Corgan couldn't put together a live tour of NWA shows?
Why the fuck not? It'd
be amazing. And we would do a Saturday special live.
I could see that.
We talk to them, we can have a table and we could do a live NWA Saturday special from wherever the fuck the closest one would be. You know, that'd be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them, the NWA, doing some, you know, stadium shows.
Yeah,
you
know, I definitely can too.
You may not sell it totally out, but even if you got, you know, 3,000, 4,000 or 5,000, you know, in there. But, you know, you never know. I mean, obviously we don't know what wrestling is going to look like because we don't even know what's going to go on in the, you know, just in our regular daily lives in the world with all this going on, you know, with coronavirus. So at this point, we might as well just, you know, dream about it, come up with some ideas and hope in the future that some of this will come true. Cause I'm looking forward to, you know, listen, I'm enjoying talking about this nostalgia like we're doing tonight, but I want the real product back. I want the NWA, the new NWA to be back and strong as ever and you know, pick up where they left off. And
I am too.
And hopefully, you know, maybe they will be touring at some point and we could go see them live. And then we'll really have something to talk about on the Saturday special.
That would be very nice.
But I definitely, you know, it's nice to take a little trip back and remember Great American Bash, give Dusty his due with the Great American Bash. I think the concept was great. As you can see, some of the cards were pretty good. Again, just didn't have that marketing machine behind them. Nope. And if they did, who knows? You know, we could be looking at a whole different world of wrestling if they were able to pull off some of the things that Vince was able to do back in the 80s.
I agree. Yeah, you're right. I agree 100%. So it's been fun tonight going down memory lane. A little quicker show tonight. Nice speed show for all of you, because all of us are enjoying our holiday weekend barbecues. If you're staying tight with family, if you're social distancing. but I'm sure people still have outdoor plans and have fun. Be safe. Love each other. We're all family. Dr. G, you can follow him on Twitter at KFC14360. And yes, the big show will be debuting on July 22nd, the NWA Croc and Roll, you and Sean Kidd and Callum McDougal. I'm very excited to see that happen. So looking forward to that. We got a busy busy time here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. The newest main event just dropped. Later today, we'll have an episode of Talking WCW will be dropping. And more great stuff, wrestling's chicken salad, senior video, a bunch of stuff dropping this week. So stay here, placetobe.podbean.com, Place to Be Wrestling Network.
Place to Be Wrestling Network is hot right now, baby.
It is hot, big time. A lot of good history shows, like I said, because who the hell wants to talk about current wrestling? I mean, we tried to on Main Event, but we add a nice, that's why I love Steve Willey, kind of adds a analytical spin to it, because it's very difficult right now. Thank you, Dr. G. Always a pleasure. Join us next week on the Saturday special, where we will have part four of the NWA's Mount Rushmore series. We'll try to get a round table. I'm going to try and call some people together, and everyone will have their own opinion on who they think that fourth face.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Our Mount Rushmore. Harley Race, Dusty Rhodes, and Ric Flair are etched in stone. Is it Lou Thesz? Is it Sting? Is it Hulk Hogan? God, no. Is it Jim Crockett? Is it Bob Geigel? Oh, God, but imagine Bob Geigel's mushy face on a mountain. Anyway, we'll talk about that next week. And then for the next few episodes after that, depending how NWA, we're just going to assume that the current NWA will still be kind of on hiatus. The doctor and I are going to, we did an episode about Sweet Charlotte, the NWA World's Heavyweight title. I think you and I maybe will do a series on the other big titles that happened, that were around during the Great Crockett days, the U.S. title, the TV title, some of the best champions, some of the funnier champions. So something to think about down the line for future episodes. But next week here on the Saturday special, we will do part four of the Mount Rushmore series. Hope you enjoyed it. Watch the Bash, both the current one on NXT and the old school ones on the Hidden Gems and the WWE Network. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. I'm Scott. He's the doctor. You're not.
Happy 4th. Ciao.